Nii et kuna siis Andreas Matskat selles ettekandes kasutab väga palju mina vormi, siis ma loen selle ka niimoodi ette, aga siis pidage silmas, et ma ei pea ennast silmas, vaid Andreas peab ennast silmas. Nõnda, ettekanne ise on siis ja ingliskeeles ja nagu te siis näete selle PowerPointi esimese slaidi pealt on selle pealkiri Deconstructing Spirituality, Collage and Decollage Techniques in Arvo Pärt's Credo. Arvo Pärt's current standing as composers rests almost exclusively on the works he has been composing since the late 70s. These works, associated with the so-called Tintinnabul style, got popular to a wide, and I should add, Western audience by the record company ECM, and to a great extent, it is these works which established Pärt's reputation as a composer whose works promote deep spirituality. However, there is a large series of works, a lot of them relatively unexplored, that precede the Tintinnabul style. Two main features are significant for these earlier, more or less experimental works. First, Pärt was the first Estonian composer to use 12-tone techniques in his composition in the early 60s. Secondly, from around 1964, Pärt sought to incorporate pre-existent music into his own compositions, in particular compositions by Johann Sebastian Bach. A good example for this is the collage on BACH, where Pärt combines the BACH motif with quasi-baroque textures and quotations of actual music by Bach, whereas the result is, according to Bohs Hillier's book on Arvo Pärt, both straight and distorted. The last and, not only in my opinion, most remarkable compositions of these pre-Tintinnabuli compositions is Credo, which Pärt has composed in 1968. Credo is scored for solo piano, chorus and orchestra and encompasses both of these main features. The piece is substantially based on the first prelude in C major of Bach's well-tempered piano, but also incorporates 12-tone scales and elements of aleatoric music. Peter Quinn regards it as one of the key works for an understanding of Pärt's oeuvre as a whole, and whether or not we can agree with him, there is no doubt that Credo is a crucial work in many respects. Above all, Credo is Pärt's first sacred composition, where sacred does not involve liturgical usability, but personal spirituality by means of the text. To approach the topic of my paper, let me first give you a brief introduction to Pärt's Credo. At the first glance, the piece can be divided into three major sections, where the first part begins like the third part ends, with a literal quotation of Bach's C major prelude. In the beginning, from bars 1 to 15, the entire score can be reduced to their chorus parts, which are mere imitations of the chords in Bach's prelude. Further 9 bars in the solo piano continue the quotation. And here is the first summary. Part 25 of Bach's Credo corresponds to part 28 of the prelude, and in a way, part 25 is a turning point in the composition. Bach now introduces a series of chords that are built of a note row based on the circle of fifths. A single note C in the French horn first, followed by the fifth CG in the viola parts, then two fifths CGD in French horns and trombone, three fifths CGDA in the string parts, and so on until the entire chromatic scale sounds simultaneously in bars 138 to 147. And here we have our second. Parts 260 to 358 form the climax of the composition. Black beams in the score indicate free improvisation and thus quasi-aleatoric structures lacking of any tonal order. From par 349 on, this piece is accompanied by 12-tone scales in the winds parts and resuming the pedal point C in the string parts. And here we hear sound example 3. Bach now restores tonality step by step in that he reduces the 12-note groups in exact opposite order by one note at a time until finally there is again the C only. The piano part recalls Bach's prelude before the piece ends a little surprising, with a D major 7th chord followed by C major in strings and piano only, so that speaking in terms of classical harmony, the last credo remains unresolved. And here we have sound example 4. Thank you. this bow-like form seems to clearly correspond with the text. The beginning alters the opening of the liturgical creed, Credo in un Deum, I believe in one God, becomes Credo in Jesum Christum, I believe in Jesus Christ, and follows it up with a manifold repeated line from the Gospel of Matthew, Audi vistis dictum oculum pro oculum dentem pro dente, ye have heard that it hath been said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. When music has reached its climax in the text, is continued with the Gospel of Matthew, autem ego vobis dico non esse resistendum in iurie, but I say unto you that ye resist not evil. The text comes to an end with a single word, credo, I believe. The lines taken from Matthew do not coincide exactly with the Latin biblical text, but I will come back to that later. According to Pat's earlier compositions, we can compare his composition techniques with collage technique in the visual arts. A collage is a work made from an assemblage of different forms, thus creating a new whole. It may include newspaper clippings, ribbons, and bits of colored of handmade papers, portions of other artwork, photographs, or whatever fits to the artist's intention. In case of Pat's Credo, the different forms are Bach's prelude, the circle of fifths, and improvisational passages together with the liturgical and biblical quotations. But since the climax of the pieces is a result of virtually gluing all this together and then tearing it off again, I suggest considering décollage techniques in that composition as well. Décollage in art is the opposite of collage. Instead of an image being built up of all or parts of existing images, cutting, tearing away, or otherwise removing pieces of an existing image created. It's rather common for this technique to use a multi-layered canvas as starting material for the collage techniques. You may think of several posters that are placed over another, and now the top poster or posters have been ripped, revealing to a greater or lesser degree the poster or posters underneath. In Pat's Credo, we can regard that part of the score where black beams indicate total musical interdetermination, a sort of multi-layered score, the result of the décollage techniques, where Pat is successively removing pieces of each layer until the C major chord is uncovered. Pat's Credo seems easy to explain, therefore. According to Paul Hillier, the text itself makes explicit the elements which are to form the work's basis. The work presents a confrontation between the forces of good and evil, and the musical characterization will come as no surprise. A pristine C major former and aleatory cacophony for the latter. Hillier admits that the strength of the works does not lie in the juxtaposition of tonality and atonality, but rather in how tonality is negated step by step. But actually, this does not affect the dichotomy of good and evil represented by pure C major and aleatory cacophony. This explanation, however, disregards some crucial aspects. The most obvious is that in every collage, the used material cannot be detached from its genuine context. The different forms glued together create a new one, but do not lose their meaning. Californian artist Mitzi Trachtenberg, for example, in a collage of her Uncovering America series, uses fragments of posters where specific words arouse attention. Sign your death certificate. This line is a quotation from the rap song, The Funeral, the first song of Ice Cube's album, Death Certificate, of 1991. To know this makes a difference in our perception of this collage. In Pat's Credo, there are two essential characteristics of his collage techniques, where these deliberations have to be considered. The first one affects the text. Without knowing the original text, we would not have to wonder why Bert has altered them from Credo in Unum Deum to Credo in Iesum Christum, and from Ego autem dico vobis non resistere malo to autem ego vobis dico non esse resistendum injuria. This can be translated as, "But I say unto you that it is not allowed to resist injury." Quite a wide difference to the biblical quotation, but no one seems to have noticed that before. In addition to it, we have to bear in mind that the lines from Matthew, taken from the Sermon of the Mount, for their part enclose a quotation from the Hebrew people. The beginning, oculum pro oculum, tente pro tente, is a citation of Exodus that is turned by Jesus Christ with autem ego vobis dico, and these of all words are altered. So Bert gives us his interpretation of Christ's reinterpretation of the Torah. The second characteristic of Bert's collage technique lies consequently in the music. Bach's prelude is not a discrete composition, but part of a cycle that already covers the entire possibilities of the chromatic scale with an apotheosis in the dodecaphonic subject of B minor fugue. One would assume that Bach's well-tempered piano as a whole stands for fulfillment of a dodecaphonic raw material, and that the C major prelude for its part is a result of a decollage process. The well-tempered piano regarded as a multi-layered canvas from that the prelude has been uncovered. It may be appropriate to also adapt this way of thinking to the text. The reinterpretation of the Torah is part of a decollage technique in that the basic intention of the multi-layered biblical text is uncovered. You may have recognized that I doubt the simple dialectic of the C major harmony, standing for the chord, and dodecaphonic cacophony, standing for the evi. With this, I refer to the French philosopher Jacques Derrida and his approach known as deconstruction. Deconstruction pursues the meaning of a text to the point of undoing the oppositions on which it's apparently founded, and to the point of showing that those foundations are irreducibly complex. Deconstruction generally attempts to demonstrate that any text is not a discrete whole, but contains several irreconcilable and contradictory meanings, that any text therefore has more than one interpretation. Without going into his deeper here, the suitability of this approach seems striking to me, because C major harmony is no opposite to the dodecaphonic cacophony, but rather the result of tearing off the appropriate layers from the canvas. C major harmony stands for a complex framework of multivalent meanings, a C major for its part, still more as a C major prelude from the well-tempered piano. Bert apparently takes the material of Bach's prelude as a reliable model where dodecaphonic or even aleatoric structure could tend to lead musical development to a dead end. His compilation of the text can be understood in a similar manner. The essential meaning has to be uncovered from the big picture. Soviet officials saw the title and text as political provocation. Though Bert insisted on the absence of any political agenda, authorities read Credo as a manifesto of passive resistance to an oppressive government. However, they did not read Bert's altered Latin text. It's not allowed to resist injury, in the best case, was ironic, if not caustic in this respect. Certainly, the keen audience might also not have noticed this alteration, since whether or not Bert intended Credo to be manifesto of resistance, there is no doubt that the Estonian audience of the premiere understood the composition as such. Okay, so Bert's Credo will no longer have to appear as a confessional creed, but as a crucial work on Bert's way to the Tintinnabuli style, where confession can be regarded as enhanced to spirituality, as well as dodecaphonic structures can be regarded as enhanced to the diatonic tonality. in respect of common ways of thinking, this appears to be upside down. While philosophers like Friedrich Hegel or Theodor Adorno have emphasized that the increase of complexity is an essential feature of modern knowledge-based societies, and thus as well as of the arts, Bertini's credo shows that there is no contradiction, at least no dialectic relation between complexity and simplicity, but that simplicity is rather the result of uncovering complexity. This will lead me to my last point. In his article on modernity, the religious and the spiritual, sociologist of religion, Wade Clark Roof, examines significant trends in American religion and the reclaiming of the spiritual. Referring to Ernst Troeltsch of two types of mysticism, that which is religiously interpreted arising from a religious tradition, and that which is deliberately cultivated and not contained within a tradition. He proposes the term reflexive spirituality for the religious counter-responses of individuals to modernity. Reflexive spirituality means a spirituality that is engaging, probing, ever trying to respond appropriately to the challenges unfolding in a changing world. Reflexive in Roof's sense means the individual's interaction with his or her cultural heritage. So reflexive spirituality incorporates religious practice that are reflexively cultivated. Much as I agree with Roof's observations, I have to note that finally everything is explainable with this kind of a postmodern anything goes conception. I feel the need of investigating the specific relevance of the elements of the cultural heritage, be it things or be it practices. In doing so, I do not presuppose that there is a definite relevance of things or practices, but that the relevance is generated by a specific meaning that again is not inherent to things or practices, but arises from a complex and ever-changing network of rules. In case of Bert's credo, we can easily explore the musical background. To Bert, Johann Sebastian Bach was the most important composer in music history, but in Soviet regime of 1968, both Bach's music and the spirituality it stands for was rejected. Obviously, specific relevance arises from this rejection. At least Bert cannot have ignored that he was promoting musical aesthetics that were suspected of formalism and bourgeois nationalism. Since the Soviet regime was basically atheistic, a composition like Bert's credo thus became a manifestation of fundamental opposition, even if the text is no confession of faith in a clerical sense. In fact, Bert's religious background in 1968 was that of a born Lutheran, but since we know that he became Orthodox just 2 years later, in 1970, we may assume that in religious respect he was one of those persons that Roof calls returnees, once religiously active, then dropped out and now exploring a traditional religious home. Even in former Protestant areas like Estonia, there was no chance to stay in touch with the Lutheran Church during the Soviet regime. So perhaps dropping out of his historic spiritual heritage may be involuntary. But the text of his credo, for sure, can be taken as a part of his reflexive spirituality. These few words, adopted and altered from Christian liturgy and scripture, are the essence of his spirituality, and this essence culminated in his first sacred composition. However, the concept of reflexive spirituality also fits to the contemporary perception of Bert's later compositions. According to Roof's, contemporary spirituality is designated by the keywords of postmodern conceptions: loss of the grand narrative, fragmented and relative conception of truth, pessimism about progress, search for truth from many sources. Bert's music apparently offers an alternative to those listeners who are sensitive to some or all of these keywords. If Bert's credo is a returnee's work, his later composition can be regarded as testimonies of a safely returned, where the simplicity of the Tintinabuli style conveys the certainly individual in the modern or postmodern society are looking for. Therefore, I regard Pelskredo not only as crucial work on his way to the Tintinnabuli style, but as crucial to the sacred music in modernity at all. Thank you very much.